My cousin, Jeannie Rasmussen, she taught it to me. She's like 80 years old. And just, one day she says, remember this poem. Then she was telling it to my boys. And then I've now remind my boys and everybody else. Once I had some money and I had a friend. I loaned my money to my friend. Now I don't have my money or my friend. So, you know, it's just be careful. I tell the boys, don't loan money to a friend. If they need it, give it to them, you know, and don't co-sign a loan. If you co-sign a loan, it is your loan.
Yeah.
And so don't, and be careful what you collateralize. Don't cross-collateralize. Every deal should work on its own. If it ain't going to carry its own, why cross-collateralize it? You know, just stay focused on each deal. Be patient and don't be greedy. And remember, to be rich is to know when you have enough.
Welcome to Rhea Radio, episode 9-er.
What?
I don't. I forgot. Well, I wasn't prepared, man.
107.
Welcome to Rhea Radio, episode 107 with John Hoitch.
You're listening to Rhea Radio, the nationally trusted name in real estate investing. We dig deep to discover investors' why in real estate. If you want to skip all the BS and get in investors' heads, you're in the right spot. Be one of the thousands to check out RhiaRadio.com.
But Inception was another one I probably watched like three,
so good.
Probably like five times I watch Inception. And every time I watch it, it's like, did that really happen? Like, I forgot that clearly.
Yeah, and that movie is so nuanced that I remember I watched it with my brother-in-law, Brad, and his daughter, my niece, Cassie. And she was probably like, I don't know, 14, something like that. So, like, didn't have the longest attention span. Mm-hmm. And we were in there, and I was like, okay, listen, I've heard that you literally can't go to the bathroom during this movie. Like, so hold on to it because you're going to miss a whole bunch of important stuff. Sure enough, she was gone for like 10 minutes. She comes back. She's like, what did I miss? I'm like, I have no idea.
Let me just rewind it.
Yeah. I'm like, this is what, good luck. I mean, go, you're going to have to rent it when it comes out. You know what I mean? Because that movie was great.
It was so good.
Mine was The Departed. Ooh. I think I've seen that probably almost more than any other movie, except maybe Edge of Tomorrow with Tom Cruise.
That's a good one.
Oh, I love that movie.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Live, Die, Repeat.
Now I would have.
Oh, so good.
And I would also have to add movies like Die Hard.
Yeah, Die Hard was great.
Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Back to the Future.
I watched the movie Major League. Before I had a baseball game in high school, every time.
Yeah.
So before every game I watched it. I don't know why.
That was your hype?
I was totally pumped up. I'd watch the last scene. Where they're in the World Series or whatever. Charlie Sheen's pitching. Like, I was so into it. Yeah. It was that wild thing. Yeah.
Spaceballs.
Oh, yeah. That was great.
Sixth Sense.
See, your Schwartz is as big as mine.
Yeah.
Except Colin. He's small.
So I made some comment off that movie of Spaceballs a couple weeks ago. And at the dinner table, my daughter, of course, is like, and she watches all the Star Wars with me, right? Because they can't watch shooting movies with guns. But I said, lasers is okay, and there's no blood in it. So she can watch Star Wars. So she's like, really want to see
what's a loophole.
She wanted to see what Spaceballs was. So I played it. And it got back to that, like, oh my gosh, this isn't appropriate.
It's not appropriate.
and
Schwartz is as big as mine. Yes.
We didn't get there. It was to the point where radio edit this out as needed. But it got to the point where my phone's working, so my brain went there. It got to
it's your mom too.
Yeah, I know.
She's talking about your parenting skills.
Should we just put it in speakerphone?
Sure.
Hey, mom, you're live on the podcast. Everybody can hear you.
Hi to everybody live on the podcast. And I probably shouldn't talk to you about what I'm gonna talk to you about then.
Do it.
It would totally incriminate me.
Okay, well then let's not do it right now.
That would be probably a really good idea. I'd be breaking all kinds of rules and laws and regulations.
Well, it's not doing. Right. Okay, okay, when I'm done.
Just good meat. Bye, guys. Have a good podcast.
Love you, bye.
Bye, Mo.
Okay.
Classic.
Wait, have you guys had any fun like meetings, interviews? Like, what's going on in your guys' world, investor world? I mean, Denless, are you looking to get another property? Owen, what new projects are you taking on? I just feel like I haven't gotten any of these types of updates from you guys in a minute.
I spoke to you about a couple of passion projects. I am going full steam ahead on creating a very interesting package for. We discussed it already. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something that every family, once you cherish your ancestors and your you know, your elders' memory and their story, and you would want to preserve it, you should come and talk to me about it, because it's literally one of the best ideas that I think I've ever come up with. And it's actually something that I feel a fire burning inside to pursue. And I've never felt like this before with any kind of project that I've ever in like started.
Besides
Rio Radio, yes.
Mm. And there's one question that you added to yours that I wish I would ask my grandmother when we interviewed her, and that was...
Yeah, it's like, what message would you like to leave for the future generations? Anything. It doesn't have to be like it could be about your life, or it could be, you know, in the world today versus how it was before. Like, what is the message that you would want future generations to hear that you think would impact their life?
So when Denlis helps me edit that video up, I'm going to go ask my grandma that question, record it if it's on my phone or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, that's just great.
And implement that in her, because I'd be interested to see what she says.
Yeah.
So
I have a regret, and it's kind of around what you're talking about. Probably, God, I should know this, but I'm going to say it was maybe 10, 12 years ago. My wife's grandfather, who was like just a badass, he was living by himself, and he was in his 90s and lived in Council Bluffs, and he was just a tough old guy. You know what I mean? Like, had a, you know, he's like one of those classic old guys. You walk into their garage and they have like jars full of screws that are like in a,
I know exactly,
old pickle jar, and they're screwed up.
Those are my grandma's house, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so CIS like, kind of.
Yeah, he's got like a hammer for every occasion. Like, you know what I mean? It's like he's got the whole thing outfitted, and he was just like, he would do push-ups and sit-ups every day until into his 90s. Like, he would do 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups every day.
Wow.
Like, just a badass.
Yeah.
And he fought in the Korean War and just lived a pretty big life. Like, he finally ended up having a heart attack, and he was like 90 or right around in there when he had it. And he was still like, he was on a date when he had the heart attack, and he actually shut the door, like opened the door for his date and shut the door, and then ended up taking her home and then drove himself to the hospital. And he was having a heart attack. Who does that? I mean, he's just a badass.
Right.
And so, and a super nice guy. And I always got along with him really well. And then Jen's, my wife's sister was, Danny was telling me, like, you should interview him and like write a book. Like, he's got a crazy story to tell. Cause like the war that he was in and just his whole life was just a phenomenal story. And I was like, yeah, that sounds good. You know, like, that would be something. And then I didn't have the tools or the balls to even like attempt to do that at the time, or the motivation or whatever. Right. I wasn't ready, I guess, is what I'm saying.
It's so,
and then he's gone.
It's so hard to talk to a grandparent or somebody like that, and it's like, hey, I want to interview you to capture this in case you, or when you die. And just to admit that that person's going to die is hard.
Yeah.
You know,
I pitched it to my father, and he is anti-camera, anti-interview. Like, he has never done an interview at all with anybody. He literally told me that I am the only person who was able to convince him. And what I used was my grandson, well, his grandson and his grandchildren. Because at some point in time, they are going to be my age, and they would want answers. They would want some sort of insight into what should I be able to, what can I do next? Like, what is my family? Like, who's my family? Just like you go to ancestry.com and you try to get these different things. Like, who's my family? Where did I come from? A lot of questions that you want to get answered might not be at 30. It could be at 25. It could be at 20. It could be at 16. It could happen at any age. One of the greatest things about this project that I'm doing is that you would literally have one-on-one. Yes, it wouldn't be like if you were in person, but the video and the video experience is visual and audio. So it's much better than a written biography from somebody where you have to think of something, or even just listen to it on a podcast, podcast.
I love it, man. And it's one of those things where if you're a kid, right, and your parents are talking to you, like, oh yeah, they're talking about their grandparents, which are your great grandparents, right? And you haven't met them. You'll never meet them.
But
they're just a name and a story.
Yeah,
and you don't know anything about them.
Yeah, exactly.
They're a footnote in history.
That's it.
In your life,
and that's the whole idea about why I did this. It's like it forms a different relationship. You now have a different relationship with that person because you know so much more about them by they telling you the story.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how the setup is going to be. You are going to be talking to the person in like 30, 40, 50 years from now, 60 years, 100 years from now. The idea is you are talking to that person and you're delivering a message to that person.
Can you imagine like the three of us, our kids now, can you imagine later on in life where they have friends and they're like, yeah, I really wish my parents would have, documented some stuff where I would know more about them. And then our kids are like, bro, seriously, I don't want to hear any more at all about my dad or your dad or your dad. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're going to have so much terabytes of information just about us. And they're like, skip.
My dad.
They're like, okay, are we done yet? Like, we're good.
My dad's got like 2,000 podcasts now. He's been doing it for like 40 years.
They're like, your dad's still on podcasts? He's not on the new mind reading app? That's probably what's going to happen. We're going to be the old guys that are still podcasting.
Like Dennis,
it's not cool anymore.
Dennis, when are you going to finish that best of video where we compile all of our intros?
Dennis is like, and here in 2060, we're finally on YouTube. They're like, did you know that YouTube was acquired 30 years ago?
Dennis is going to knock over the whole entire soundboard there. He's laughing so hard.
Well, this is what we get for recording three intros in one day with multiple old fashions.
I thought at one point you were going to say that, you know, like our children would be sitting at this exact same table in this house.
I doubt that.
Doing the Omaha or the Rio Radio podcast.
No way. Skylar's going to sell this thing off immediately after Ted kicks the bucket.
I'm really hoping I have an apartment building built here by that time.
Just leave this table and this room and build around it.
Oh, God.
Can you tear everything down and leave this one room and then make it a unit inside the new building?
Yeah.
It's the mystery room. Right? Nobody can access it.
It'd be like those videos you see in China where people won't move out of their houses and the one building is in the middle of the interstate.
Yeah. That was like that. You guys have kids. So you ever watch Big City Greens?
Never heard of it.
Nope.
Oh, man. Okay, look into it. Okay. So the kids will love it. Trust me, yours will especially. But it's a cartoon about a family that moves from the like BFE to the middle of the city, and they have like a house in the middle of all this development. It's pretty funny.
Nice.
Well, guys, get prepared. You're about to jump into a podcast with John Hoich, and you're gonna have your mind blown. We don't get too deep into his personal story because we have that on a previous episode that we'll link in the show notes. But this will be a podcast that you've never heard with John Hoich. So stay tuned. And if you love what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review.
Boom.
Written.
Now, you have, I believe, bought a bunch of different asset types. So what we've talked about so far has been residential and multifamily, which I guess you could say falls into the category residential, even though it's a commercial asset with the size you're buying. What else have you bought?
This isn't your question, but I was in the lawn mowing business. I got into sprinkler systems. We put in about 8,000 sprinkler systems in my career. I got into landscaping, snow removal. I even had a nursery for a while, a greenhouse, and sold Christmas trees and poinsettia plants. And but I focused lawn care was my main business, mowing, and sold off the sprinkler, sold off the landscaping, and then mowed the commercial accounts, and then got into the military mowing across the nation. And then on the apartment side, I started getting into houses, apartments. Jerry and I did a lot of strip malls between Mr. Slusky and I and my own investments. With a couple other guys throughout my career, did 15 shopping centers.
Holy boy.
And the biggest one was at Lowe's, Michaels, and Red Robins over at 144th and Maple, the Greyhawk.
Yeah, I live right over there.
That was the biggest one I was involved in. And we sold that to Inland out of Oak Brook, Illinois. And I had a plane at the time with Greg Cutchell and Rod Cush. And we split the plane for about 8 years. And Kevin Irish was in it at one time. But it was a fun plane. I flew up to Oak Brook, Illinois, and sold the shopping center for about. And that was it was fun. Brought my accountant and the property manager and so that was the first and only time I sold to a big REIT. But it was exciting and I learned a lot.
What did a plane cost back then?
Well, we had a small one. It was a Chieftain Navajo Piper. It had 8 seats and it was about $300,000, I think.
Okay.
Something like that.
And you guys split it three ways.
And the cost to maintain it and the pilots and stuff. And I used it a lot because I was lucky that we had Leonard Swoboda was one of our pilots who was retired colonel from the Air Force. So my main use was to fly to all the different states that we had military mowing at, and he could fly right to the military base. I could go do my business nice. And be home for dinner that night.
Well, I mean, speaking of Cutchwell, I mean, Corey just called me up and wanted to go to the Nebraska game in Wisconsin, and he's like, we're going to take the plane. And then he said it'd be about $8,000, or between 8 of us, it would be about $1,000 each in gas for both ways. So I can imagine to own it and have to maintain it and pay it. I mean, that had been a hefty bill consistently.
Back then, it really wasn't. I mean, again, it was a $300,000 deal. We had it between the maintenance and the gas and the pilot. It wasn't that hard. I mean, it wasn't a Learjet, but you know, but we still got faster than a car.
Yeah. That would be so cool to have one of
but
those.
In my career, I did warehouses, flex buildings, strip malls, apartments, storage units. I've done a little bit of everything. The only thing that I did do that I wished I wouldn't have done that was a bad real estate business deal was I got in an ethanol plant in Rosholt, South Dakota. And Warren Buffett says, stay in what you know. And I did not know nothing about ethanol. And so I got my butt whipped on that of a few million dollars. But then I did a cattle deal and killing cattle and selling it as a partner. And that really went well. So sometimes you can get out of what you know and it works, and sometimes you can't. Again, it's about who you're with and who you invest with. And so the stock market is now where a majority of my money is and in the in multifamily. And I got a big industrial building, 100,000 square foot on 4 acres. I got for sale at First and Hickory, and then that'll be my last big warehouse. I'm not made for those deals either. So multifamily and stocks between now and when I go back to see the Lord someday. You know, that's all I want to do.
Do you know Warren Buffett personally?
I've got to meet him 12 times, and every time he was the most humblest man I ever talked to. One time he says, how's your twins? So he even remembered, you know, him and his wife Astrid, and just great people, a great man, a great humble man, and one of the greatest things Omaha could ever be lucky to have him be living here. He's wonderful to our city. Susan Buffett, his daughter, is wonderful. Peter and Howard Jr., I mean, he's got great children, a humble family, and a great family. We're lucky to have people like that and many more. I could stay here till midnight naming all the beautiful success stories of Omaha and the surrounding area, Council Bluffs, and being on the foundation side and philanthropy now full time, it's just neat to see how they spend their lives making it, and then you spend the rest of your life while you're still alive giving it away.
We had a speaker at the local RIA group here, and his name was Jeff Beals, and he was speaking about all the things that are growing, and there's, I mean, over $1 billion in donations in this new downtown area, the art museum, the science museum, the riverfront that they're building down here. And he's talking about it was all private donation monies. And I made the comment, I said, someone else, I go, you know, it's all, you know, people with no name, they're donating the money for the most part. And I said, well, is it Warren that's donating all that money? And he goes, well, not directly. He goes, but he goes, all the people that are donating money are stockholders of Berkshire, and they, you know, have more money. They know what to do with, and they like giving back to the city. And yes, it's through Buffett, but not directly through him. It's through all the work that he's done for this community.
Right, and those people that were wise enough, and as Warren and Charlie Munger say, I remember going to one of the meetings, and a lady, one of the question was, is why don't more people do what you do? Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's not that hard. You go out and buy some companies and let them still run their businesses. I mean, why don't other people do it? Well, Mike McCarthy is one that's kind of duplicated that. But bottom line is, I remember Charlie and Warren talking to each other on the stage, you know, how they play their show. And Warren said to Charlie, I know why nobody else does it. They don't have the patience we have. Mm-hmm. And I think it's all success and business of anything that you do in life is patience. You get in a hurry, you know, and you get greedy, you're going to lose most of the time. And if you stay calm, patient, honest, integrity, you're going to win most of the time. And that's why I think that the people who that Jeff Beals is talking about, and they're all part of the Heritage Group of Omaha, and that's a great nonprofit program of a bunch of successful people that all are on a board and team up and do some great projects for the city. And a lot of them are anonymous. A lot of them name their foundations, but they all have been patient and successful, stayed in what they know and invested wisely. And they went for the long haul. They just didn't buy and sell or day trade. Mm-hmm. None of them belong to Robin Hood, I promise you.
Have you guys gone to any of the Berkshire meetings and seen Warren speak?
I have.
Yeah. That's something I'd like to do that before, while he's still around. I mean, Warren's in his 90s.
Better get your ticket next year. Well, yeah. I mean, he's going to be 97.
Yeah.
So probably
93, I think.
Oh, is that right? Oh, okay.
Charlie's 99. Charlie's going to be 100 January 1st.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're on bonus time right now. Yeah. So it's like, if you want to hear him talk.
They're going to go to 200. I know they
think so. Yeah. So, well, I mean, if anybody's got the resources to get life extending, you know, companies working on some stuff, it's those two.
I mean, what do you guys think is going to happen when he's going to give away all of his money to his charity. I mean, how is that going to affect their business, you know, after they do pass?
Well, you got to remember, it's not going to change it at all because of what I said a little bit ago. He buys companies. He keeps the people who grew these successful companies as 19%, I believe, and he keeps 81% into Berkshire. So it's going to be business as usual the next day. Mm-hmm. And he's got such a team that he's set in place already. He's got a great board of directors. His daughter, Susan Buffett, and Howard Buffett are still on the board of there, and the leaders on there, Wally Weitz. I mean, there's a lot of successful people that he's picked to be on it and to transition the company. So I think it'll be business as usual. It might be a little blurb, you know, of the stock up or down. But it's just such a planned, solid company, well thought out, that I still keep buying it and holding it of what I have, and mm-hmm. a lot of people else I know do. And our foundation, of the Charles E. Lakin Foundation, Mr. Lakin was a large owner, and we still hold that stock. The only bad news is it doesn't give any dividends. So I think if it's possible, maybe in our lifetime, that there may be some dividends, you know, started, but maybe never, you know, maybe just be what it is forever. But it had the growth of that company. No one can criticize it for a second.
I brought it up to my mom the other day because we had the Pace Morby on, and we were talking about my mom working for Kirby and all that in that episode. And then I brought up, I go, so remind me exactly the story where you won the salesperson of the year for Nebraska. And how many shares of A stock at Berkshire did you pass on? So she won a competition in the 80s, and she won 5 shares of A stock. And the owner of the company came to her and said, hey, I'll give you and your boyfriend a all-expense trip to Maui for 9 days. And so she took that instead of taking the 5 shares.
Hope it was a fun trip.
She said it. She said it was.
That'd be about $3 million today.
Oh, my gosh.
Aloha.
Yeah.
Tiny bubbles.
John, I wanted to ask you a question about the partnership with the real estate lawyer. How do you get into a partnership with a real estate? I would think that a real estate lawyer is a good person to partner with because of the knowledge and maybe the experience that they would have to offer somebody who's now getting into real estate, or even somebody who's experienced. And based on all the benefits that you basically said that you got from him, how were you able to get into that partnership with him.
It was an introduction by Dana Mann, Dana Mann Property Management, that I believe she's retired and closed her business, but she was one of the property management companies and a gal that I've known since I was 16 or so, when I was through PJ Morgan, who's one of my mentors, you know, back when I was younger. And Dana had a property management company that managed the Oak Ridge apartments that we owned that used to be called Deauville, and we changed the name to Oak Ridge. And she was also managing Jerry Slusky's apartments at another property. And she said, Jerry wants to buy Pacific West apartments at 144th and Pacific, which is kind of the now the new entry into Applied Underwriters yep. campus. And so
Boystown area.
Right. Yep. And so we she put the lunch together, and Jerry and I hit it off. I was, you know, this orphan mow boy, you know, mowing a lot of yards and had some properties already. And Jerry was very successful in his law practice and had some real estate. He's first cousins to Tom Feldman of Broadmoor Development, who's obviously done well in apartments. And
love to get him on sometime.
Yeah. And so Jerry and John Hoich got to become friends, and we bought the Pacific West apartments. That's kind of when our career started. We brought John Lunn and Jerry Kelly and Rich Secor in the deal, and we had Steve Durham, you know, whose father owned HDR. So it was four great teams, and that was my growth and introduction to Jerry Slusky, which then went into buying multiple apartment complexes and strip malls and land and land development. And I learned so much from him. Again, for the rest of my life, I'm indebted to his knowledge and his patience with me and helping me get more knowledgeable to do what I do today.
Because I'm thinking that from what it sounds like is you worked your butt off and you got recognized. What do you say?
Oh, so good you can't ignore. Or you were so good they couldn't ignore you.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you couple that with networking.
Right. And I helped bring Jerry and I deals, and he brought deals. And I was, you know, whenever he'd call me and say, well, I got an idea. And I go, where, what, let's do it. So, I mean, we had a lot of fun, you know. It's all a journey. And, you know, when you can have a partnership for 20 years and still respect each other with all your hearts, that's even a better journey.
Yeah. Well, speaking of journeys, we have a journey down the failure path that we usually dive into at some point here called
Failing Forward.
And this Failing Forward is brought to you by JM Real Estate Capital.
Hi, it's Rob, JM Real Estate Capital. We're the money guys that you need to know for all your real estate investments. Talk to us. We can do what your local bank can't or won't do. We don't have millions. We have trillions with a T to lend. 844-WE-CLOSE or go online, jmrecapital.com. That's jmrecapital.com. JM Real Estate Capital, smart solutions for the real estate investor.
Where we talk about, you know, you mentioned ethanol and getting involved in something that was a little outside of your, I guess, wheelhouse. Is that maybe something that we could talk about that didn't go according to plan and maybe you learned some things along the way about it?
Yeah, I mean, it was 1995-ish. My CPA, Jim Jandrin at the time, came to all of a bunch of his clients. I was one of them. And I brought in about three other investors, and his brother-in-law put a deal together in Rosholt, South Dakota. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, this is my chance to be a J.R. Ewing of Dallas and be in the oil business. You know, I mean, it's ethanol was becoming hot, and who doesn't want to be on the startup of something huge? And, you know, my eyes got bigger in my stomach. I put some money in it, and then I kept putting more money in it and more money in it, and then the hole became bigger. It was mismanaged by the brother-in-law. It was mismanaged by the developer. It was mismanaged by the guy that built it. Everything went wrong. Not one thing went wrong. Failure forward was constant. We got into lawsuits. We got into bankruptcy of the plant, you know, which I was a, you know, limited partner. So I had no say-so in none of the journey. And it was also one of the things that taught me that I want to own 50% or 100% of everything the rest of my life so that I can control my journey and destiny and know my exit strategy. And there was none except for loss, loss, loss. And I got so many losses, I'm still carrying them forward.
Hey, failing forward, right?
Yeah.
Carry the losses forward.
And I've got into, you know, strip malls during 08 to 12, you know, to where, you know, I got a phone call every day from a lawyer saying our tenant's going to file bankruptcy if you don't give them a rent reduction. And between 08 and 12, out of the hundreds of tenants we had, over 50 ended up getting rent reductions and went bankrupt.
Oh, geez.
And so that's when I, you know, lost a lot of money and didn't know how to deal with it. Except for patience, and I didn't do anything wrong. And I worked with the banks, communicated, and I've never had a judgment against me on a business thing. Never had any bankruptcies, never had any, but so I was lucky because many did in 08 to 12. It was, you know, not the Great Depression. It was absolutely the Great Recession. And it ended a lot of businesses and a lot of people's lives that took their lives during that period in Omaha, Nebraska, mm-hmm. and around the world. And so failure is not fatal. It's getting down, but not staying down is success. You know, get back up and keep fighting. And failure is fatal if you take your life, obviously, the game's over. And so I pray that anybody that just money comes and goes. And when you have all your money is your God, then that's what happens. And when God is your God, whatever your God and higher spirit is, that's better, you know? Mm-hmm. And so all my life, I've always given God the glory. And definitely I had my troubles of staying focused on God first, family second, business third. But I've tried to prioritize those three my whole life. So no matter what I failed in an investment, or a business or whatever it is, you know, it's all temporary. You know, this, you know, those things change like the tide.
Now, so John, after all the trials and tribulations over the years, owning multiple businesses, owning multiple asset classes in real estate, having success, having some failures that you learned from, now that you are in the, you know, current like lens that you're looking at your life and your body of work that you've put together, what do you think is, if there's somebody that's starting out in this business and they really like your story, what advice might you give somebody that's, kind of early on in their career about, how to, you know, make themselves an overnight success 40 years in the making?
I have two wonderful sons who I love with my whole heart, life, and soul. Their names are Jeremy Michael Hoich and Justin Lee Hoich. They're both 26, October 16th. They had just turned 26. They didn't want my business. When I asked them to buy my company, that Aaron Gunderson, whose family owns Gunderson Jewelry, he bought my military mowing company. He bought my corporate mowing company, and he bought out my partnership with you with Nebraska Scientific. We sold fetal pigs and bullfrogs and the kits to make the dissection
for the eight, schools.
Yeah, we own the whole United States and Canada. It's another company. That
what
I had for
in
five
the
years.
World?
Yeah. So
John's got his hands in everything.
Yeah, I was going to say that is random.
Yeah.
What was it called? Scientific what?
Nebraska Scientific. Nebraska We're still Scientific. In business.
Did down you start by, that?
No, I bought it 70 years old from a Rotarian friend of mine named Howard Epstein. And he offered to sell it to me 30 years ago when I mowed the lawn.
That's Brandon's wife's family.
And then
Who'd you say?
Howard Epstein.
Oh, yeah, like
the Jewish Federation president.
Carrie Epstein is married to Brandon Tauber, who's my business partner.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, I bought his company of him and his partner had it for 30 years, and they bought it when it was 40 years old, and then I ran it for 5 years with my partners Aaron Gunderson and Mickey Kinney and guys. And so anyway, I bought it. I owned. I don't know, I think half or whatever, but it was just that, you know, my kids didn't want it. They
didn't want a bunch of embalmed pigs.
Well, one day we wanted them to do every aspect, and Jeremy and Justin had to clean 1,000 starfish in the formaldehyde, and they go, we quit. And then I said, well, do you want to buy the military mowing and corporate mowing? And they go, nothing about the business. You know, they said, we don't want your job. I go, what's my job? Well, you're a workaholic still, Dad. You love us. You've given us a life that your dad didn't give you. And so my advice to your question would be that what they said to me that day, Dad, we want experiences and love what we do. And you hated what you did. You did it because that was your tool to raise your four sisters and your brother and build your life. And now I'm doing what I love doing. I love running my foundation. I love being the vice president of the Charles E. Lakin Foundation. We do so many great impact things for families in Southwest Iowa and Douglas and Sarpy County. I do it 40 hours a week plus, I'm still doing 60 hours a week of everything, but I don't have any of the businesses anymore. I have Laura Kempis, has been with me for 15 years, and Laura Kempis is my only employee now.
She's your COO, yeah, basically.
And yeah. Council Bluffs, Iowa, Jennifer Green is our grant manager, and Laura's out in Valley at my office. I live at Timbershore Lake in Valley on a lake, and it's simple. I've just simplified my life, and so that's my answer to anybody that wants to do anything that they have joy in and that they love what you do. And Jeremy and Justin, Jeremy's owns Scales Glass by Jeremy Hoich, making glass blowing of beautiful, jewelry.
He's not at Hot Shops, is he?
Well, he has his own. He's Jeremy Hoich, Scales Glass, has his own studio and his own shop. And Scales Glass by Jeremy Hoich on Instagram, Facebook.
Nice.
Get on it now and get your beautiful jewelry and what he calls something called functionals. I don't know what that means. But he's a great artist. And Justin Hoich is a rock climber, graduated from UNO and UNL. And Lincoln hired him to run the rock climbing wall. They got like a $6 million wall that he manages in their outdoor ed program. And he's getting a master's degree in sustainability environmental science. So
that's awesome.
Who would have thunk?
Yeah.
You know, two things that I don't know anything about, and they love what they're doing. And
environmental science, cutting grass, it seems like it could be in the same category.
You know what? So that's the opposite. They both told me if I leave all the apartments to them in my will when I die, that they want me to know up front that what made all my money from the ground up, mowing lawns with the Sears Craftsman lawnmower, all the grass will disappear, Dad, and it'll be pollinating gardens everywhere. So there will not be any grass left on the Hoich properties. I said, well, you might as well start now. They might be onto something. You know what I mean? You know, save all that money from the mowing and the sprinkler and landscaping.
Let's start testing it out.
Yeah.
Now, to put a bow on this, you have talked about your book a little bit, and you mentioned before we started recording that there might be a new edition that's coming out. Is that true?
Well, I'd like to, you know, all the things that I learned, the book came out in 2006, and by that time I was...
And this should be a movie, just so you know. I was blown away when I read this.
Well, called From the Ground Up, It's Not Just Business.
I want to read it. I haven't read it yet.
This is a movie. I don't know if you have ever talked to anybody about it.
Well, I sent it to Alexander Payne with a letter, and yeah. I was hoping he would do a Nebraska story about it. Not about me, but about the story.
I could see George Clooney maybe playing you.
Well, hundreds of people came up to me and said, are you Dustin Hoffman?
He's a very attractive man also. Yeah. Probably similar stature, right? Yeah, he's around your height.
Dustin
5'6".
Hoffman. Everybody thinks I'm Dustin Hoffman. So, yeah, I'm Rain Man. But I would love to do a movie of it just to help people with a hand up, not a handout. Helping people believe in themselves that if this guy who had no money, had no ability to do anything about it other than have faith and have God as his say Jesus Christ is my Savior, God. But if, whether you're Jewish or Muslim or Hindu or whatever religion you are, you know, or even if you're just spiritual, I believe that is at least have a higher power, you know, just like the 12-way test and alcohol and AA. The 12 steps in AA is just having a higher power. The Stevens Center, where I've got the John L. Hoich Recovery Center. When I go to speak there, I just say, have a higher power. You know, do I want it? Would I like it to be personally self-serving for Jesus Christ and God? Yeah, because I believe that's what I was raised. But I just
you believe in what you're raised.
Yeah, I think it's help. I'm more open about being at least be, you know, don't think you're God because it don't work. And at the John L. Hoich Westside Alumni House, I go there and I talk and to a lot of the kids and I give them hope, you know, that this year we did the 35th scholarship of boys and girls that I give that write a 300-word essay, why they had a life of adversity, but what they did to not give up. And so if you just don't give up and what you believe in and what you dream in and what can you do to impact somebody else's life with your success, whether it's money or whether it's your time. And I believe that giving your time is even more valuable than money.
There's one thing that really impacted me when I heard you speak once, and I don't remember if I asked you the question or if you brought it up, but I was really wondering how you continue a legacy, you know, into the future. And you were talking about the Westside Foundation and creating these scholarships, and you have the Hoich House there. And you said it's one thing just to build it, but you've created a way to be able to fund it for if not 100 years, I think you said, and to be able to keep funds going into it.
Well, I'm going to leave in my will. There's enough money to continue my goals of the perpetualness for the scholarships. The district takes care of the house now, but I do the scholarships, and the District 66 is so made up of so much, a great board of directors, a great educational team. Dr. Lucas and the everything there is, like, in my mind, perfect. I just think they're wonderful, and I'm just a little seed that's part of it. Very, you know. But if everybody is a seed and you plant a whole bunch of seeds, it's a lot of mighty oaks will grow. You know, and that's what it's so beautiful is. There's no egos there, even though there's assumptions. But I think it's so humble. The district's humble. The people are humble, and all the programs are going to be, if everybody can just do a seed and leave perpetualness, you know, that's what's all about. And between now and when I meet the Lord, I just want to give as much as I can, help as much as I can, and stay healthy. You know, go to the YMCA and work out and drink a lot of water and behave yourself. But it's important to just give back. And my book from 2006, when this one was out, to where I am today in 2023, so much has happened in my life that I would like to do maybe a second book, or maybe the new world of podcasting, and you could just do the second book on a podcast, and then you guys tell the world.
There you go. Denlis is right here, and we got the studio available if you need it. So,
I found out my dad wasn't my dad. That was the big news. I'm 23andMe and Ancestry.com. My friend Bill Harvey, who owns Big Red Kino, he blessed me with his time and did the research through 23andMe and Ancestry.com through genealogy and found out that I'm not, I thought I was 100% Croatian from Yugoslavia on my father's side, and learned that I thought I was Scotch-Irish on my mom's side. Found out I'm 10% Jewish, 40% Scotch-Irish, and 50% Italian from Salerno, Italy.
I see some Italian in you.
Hey, what do you want, huh? What do you want? And so my real name is Johnny Lee Rascio, R-A-S-C-I-O, and my father's name was Joseph Rascio from Paterson, New Jersey. He was a sheriff, a constable, and a repo for banks, and he had a Cadillac on his plate said Repo Joe.
I thought for sure you were going to say it was Dustin Hoffman. Yeah.
So have you found any other brothers and sisters through this?
Our father died of a heart attack in 2061, but I found my half-brother, Mario Sasso, who's 5 months older than me, we had different mothers. And he lives right by Paterson, New Jersey. And he was a SWAT team cop for Yonkers, New York, and NYPD. And I have a sister named Debbie, who I have met both of them. And she's my sister, and she lives in Booton, New Jersey, right by Paterson. So you can't make this shit up.
Do you guys look alike then?
Yeah.
Yeah?
They're better looking than me. But
do you guys get together?
We've gotten together 3 times and hope to do it more.
Yeah. And you said 2016 this connection happened?
In 2020.
2020. This is just really recent. Yeah. I mean, how crazy. I've heard this story from like multiple people where they got on these 23andMe's or Ancestry and they found their parents or didn't know that their parent wasn't their parent. I mean, I've heard some crazy stories on this topic. That could be a whole podcast on its own.
I've got a crazy story. I'm not going
to
tell
you. You need to have Bill Harvey from Big Red Kino as the attorney and an owner.
Yeah.
Who's also going to be him and his partners or be my partners on the Foundry Apartments going up in Norfolk, 180 units coming near you soon.
So wait, Norfolk, you mentioned that we've had people from Norfolk talk. I know I'm kind of switching here, but like that's a small town, Nebraska. What made you guys think that this, you know, that this would be a good place to throw up a massive apartment complex?
Well, you've heard of, what was the guy, Buzzy, that started the Flamingo in Las Vegas?
I have no idea.
Yeah,
I think his name was Buzzy or something. And he went out there with the mafia, and he says, look at this ground. It was out in no man's land, you know, and then they built the Flamingo, and now it's called Las Vegas, so... Bill Harvey asked me after he found my father through the genealogy, I said, is there anything I could ever do for you, Bill? Just anything.
Matter of fact.
And he said, you know what? My partners and I at Big Red Kino, they own a Big Red Kino and a restaurant. They have about 9 restaurants and kinos and then several satellites of their kino all over. And they had 10 acres next to their Big Red Kino there, a couple of years ago, we went out there and I'm thinking of Buzz, you know, I think his name was it for Flamingo. And I'm like, maybe a casino next to Kino Red. But I said, apartments, 10 acres. There's some wetlands to deal with there. Norfolk, it's just been ground, 10 acres sitting next to their 275th and Paz Walk, which is a really high end area. It's not high end, but it's so much. It's a great area, great area on fire. They got, you know, hospitals and restaurants and shopping centers and university. Everything is right there. And so it's like by 72nd and Dodge of Omaha in Norfolk. Mm-hmm. And I said, let's build apartments here. And so it's been a couple of years. Did a lot of zoning, and I was on the Omaha Planning Board for 18 years. So I was able to learn a lot by the gratefulness of serving that, and so I've been able to use those techniques, and Spencer Lombardo, a friend of mine, is helping me, and so we're working with Josh, the mayor of Norfolk. We got it zoned. We got the wetlands worked out. We're ready to start building probably next spring.
What other?
So it's using an infill piece of ground that was in Norfolk, and the reason why is because they owned it, and so they're putting that into the deal, and we're going to make some beautiful workforce apartments for the need of housing in Norfolk, Nebraska. They got the new core steel plant there that's successful. And the mayor said, and the city council said, we need housing here. And almost all small communities throughout Southwest Iowa and Nebraska are all dying for housing.
I remember having this conversation with Tamara Bruno about this too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you said currently about 2,500 units. And is that correct?
That I'm a partner in or own.
Yeah. And what cities are
Bellevue,
what states
to
are
West
in?
Omaha.
Okay.
And then I have some in Florida, some real estate in Florida.
And in Florida, you're doing what, retirement?
We have assisted living there in Cape Coral. And then our foundation, we have 154 units in Tampa.
Okay.
That I'm the asset manager.
And how are those working out for you?
They're good. Yeah. I mean, their apartments just keep renting. People have to put their head on a pillow at night and go to sleep. So they may not, you know, pay their rent at a strip mall, but they sure as hell will figure out a way to pay their rent in their units most of the time. Sometimes you got to evict them, but it's overall people are, you know, pay their rent.
And you had at one point a ton of strip malls, but if I remember right, you only have like one strip mall now, right?
I sold my last one recently in Southport. Still have some ground out there by the Cabela's where I developed, co-developed all of Southport East development where PayPal and Securities of America is. That was my biggest project that I was involved in developing and finishing it out. We still got a few acres left there. And
you're doing it with the Trent and Magid, right? Hmm? You and Trent and Magid are working together on that one?
Trent and I brought in as the salesperson, and he was a partner in a few of the lots, and his brother Tucker. But great guy, great family. The Magid family is number one. You know, they're a great family. And I just now I have Steve Nabity of Skyline Point. He's bought my shopping center, and then he bought into some of the ground with me, and we're hoping to possibly build some retail and apartments on the ground there.
Well, this interview so far has been absolutely amazing. And I mean, you're just a wealth of knowledge. I feel like we could literally be here for a few more hours just talking about your stories. And I think that we'll probably have to have you back on in the near future just to kind of get into the stories that you've had with the, with all these amazing people and how they've influenced you.
It's been a ride, and but I couldn't have done it with all the amazing people that I met. And, you know, at the end of the day, as Father Flanagan would say, there's no such thing as a bad boy, and there's really not a bad person. You know, everybody has, maybe disagreements, but it's how you work it out. Mm-hmm. I've always had a habit of forgive and forget,
yeah.
And I don't carry on animosity or grudges. It's not worth it. Life's too short.
I've got the forget part down. Still working on my forgiveness.
Well, you know, there's that line that I've heard you mention in the past, and it's when you, how'd it go? You said in another interview, but when you give money to friends, you sometimes lose, or when you loan money to friends.
My cousin, Jeannie Rasmussen, she taught it to me. She's like 80 years old. And just, one day she says, remember this poem. Then she was telling it to my boys. And then I've now remind my boys and everybody else. Once I had some money and I had a friend. I loaned my money to my friend. Now I don't have my money or my friend. Mm. So, you know, it's just be careful. I tell the boys don't loan money to a friend. If they need it, give it to them, you know. And don't co-sign a loan. If you co-sign a loan, it is your loan.
Yeah.
And so don't, and be careful what you collateralize. Don't cross collateralize. Every deal should work on its own. If it ain't going to carry its own, why cross collateralize it? You know, just stay focused on each deal, be patient, and don't be greedy. And remember, to be rich is to know when you have enough.
I love what you said there. Those are some great sage words of advice for people. And I think it just sucks because people hear them and they still ignore them. And they'll be like, yeah, but this is different. And I'm guilty of that because I've had to learn some hard lessons in the last probably year and a half, 2 years about loaning money to people. And, you know, family, friends, it changes things the minute you do it.
Well, you know, you've talked about the $100 million that Jeff Bills talks about, right? Mm-hmm. That's been down there. And someday it'll be $1 billion, and God knows. And with all the net worth in the next 10 years, an inheritance and generational wealth inheritance, so on, there's going to be so much money at the community, the Pottawatomie Community Foundation, what should they call it? The Community Foundation of Western Iowa, the Omaha Community Foundation, the different ones are going to have so much money, the private foundations, our own foundation at Lakin, the John L. Hoyt Foundation, all of them are going to have so much money that gives out. But what was it at the end of the day? You really don't need as much money as people keep thinking they need. So, you know, you should do a budget for yourself and reach your goals and be happy. But some people are, you know, just can't quit, the old junkies till they die, you know? And so it's all up to you what you want. But at the end of the day, net worth means nothing. Cash flow means everything. And if you really realize, and all these people realize, they could have retired and stopped a long time ago, and it proves because they made so much money that now they're spending their lives and lawyers and estate planning giving it away. So it becomes work. And so, you know, just what point do you just go fishing?
You know, that's so interesting because when I started planning on coming to America, my idea was to be as rich as the richest person. Because at that point in time, I was looking at Grant Cardone and I was like, yeah, I could be like him. And then, well, now I don't want to be like him anymore. Not for those reasons, but it as I started getting like a family, so I got a son. And then as I started growing up, my wife, I was like, my family is worth much more than my family time, and my family is worth much more than any amount of money that I could raise. And my vision started shifting and shifting. And instead of wanting to be the richest person in the world or being all up in 1%, now it's more of being able to retire my wife so that I could get to spend more time with her and having money put away so that my son could explore his wildest desires, or my children could explore whatever they want to do, but know that there's always something that they could fall back on, and I'll be able to help them, navigate through life and that kind of stuff. So just to hear you say that, you know, like the whole patience thing and having patience with life and stuff, it kind of is difficult for somebody, I guess, with like me, who is super ambitious because I want to spend so much time with my wife. So I want to retire her as soon as possible. But it's like, if I go too hard, I might fall even harder. So it's like, for people who are super ambitious like me, like how do you marry patience with the ambition so that you don't, you know, you get what you want, but...
Three things. One, it's called content. I mean, where is content? When is enough enough? Two is, living life to the fullest and enjoying your family and your kids. You're paying your bills. If you're paying your bills and eventually you get your home paid for and your car paid for where you have no debt, that could be everybody's number one goal, to stay out of debt, don't have credit card debt, don't live over your means. I'm going to ask you, have you ever seen a hearse that has a dead body in it? Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen one pull a U-Haul?
No.
No one's ever taken it with them, right?
Yeah.
So you only need enough for what you need. Live in your needs, live in your ability to pay your bills, and be happy. And if you get some extra coin, invest it, but don't idolize it. Just enjoy it. Don't spend your life trying to be rich, because no one's ever taken it with them.
Yeah.
And most of the time when you do die, I've never seen too many people have their partners or their business associates at their deathbed. It's their family. Your family's going to be at your deathbed telling you they love you, not about your money, And so, and at your funeral, the main people that'll be there is your loved ones. Yeah. So that's what counts.
Yeah.
Your family. So stay focused on your family, and the rest comes by itself.
Yeah. And part of that ambition is also philanthropy. So I love giving of myself and of my time and of my skills. And some point in time, I would love to give of whatever money that I could get, like, well, not only through tithing, but
your knowledge is also of wealth.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
Well, John, this has been amazing. We've got one section left.
We're almost out of time. Let's get into the OT with Owen and Ted.
And we've got some questions here that we ask every guest, and we are curious to see what you have to say. First question for you, and I'll modify this a touch, because normally we ask people what their first book is going to be about or titled, but since you already have one, your follow-up, and yours is called From the Ground Up, It's Not Just Business.
How can people get this book?
They can go to the johnhoich.com.
johnhoich.com. It's johnhoich.com.
Or they can go buy used ones for all kinds of different prices on Amazon and Google. I've bought some back when I'm in an emergency somewhere and I don't have one, and they'll send it overnight to just where I can gift it to somebody.
You need to read it and put it on Audible.
Well,
so it's on there for you.
Will you help me do that? I'll pay you.
Let's make it happen.
I got 2,500 more books coming, so I can go to the Stevens Center at the Hoyt Recovery Center, and I love giving them out to the clients there. And then I'm also getting it e-commerce. So they're working, not e-commerce, but digital, so that you can get it online.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nice.
An e-book.
An e-book. It's coming soon.
It's a quick read.
Well, if you need a voiceover involving a sexy Jamaican accent, Denlis is your man here, if you want him to narrate it for you.
I want Dustin Hoffman.
Okay, that's even better. Okay, so the second book, do you have a title picked out yet?
I haven't, but it'll be coming and announcing, maybe Higher Ground.
Ooh, I like it. Okay, perfect. All right, Ted, what do you got?
John, with all the amazing people you've met in your life, I can only imagine what this question, how you're going to answer it. But if you could interview one person in the world today, it's your podcast, and you get to put anybody at the table today that's alive, who would you interview, and what one question do you want to ask?
I'd probably interview Warren Buffett, and you know, and just really try to learn how he stayed so patient. Mm-hmm. How do you stay so patient? And that'd probably be my person and my question.
So if you want to reach out to Warren and have him on the podcast, we'll let you, we'll have you at the table with us, and then we can just work it that way.
We would do that for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll see what I can do.
He'd be like, where in South Omaha do I got to go?
Okay.
We'd probably take the podcast studio to him.
Yeah.
That'd be better.
Have podcast studio. We'll travel. Okay, John, we're at your funeral. It's very sad. Who is going to deliver your eulogy? And what do you hope they're going to say about you?
I hope it's my twin boys, Jeremy and Justin, and that they said that I was there as a dad, that I was there when they needed me, and I was a pain in the ass and was always constantly giving them knowledge, constantly giving them advice, constantly telling them what not to do or what they should do or what they could do. But that they constantly did what they wanted to do, and that I let them be them, and I didn't micromanage them, and I let them have their own journey, and that I could be part of their life as they were part of my life, and that I loved them unconditionally, and that I put them on Facebook too many times.
I would recognize them just because you do post enough pictures with them, which is good. That's what your proud dad is supposed to do, right?
That's great. That's probably the most well thought out answer that we've had to that.
But it was one from the heart, and I can see the emotion in your face when you're saying that too.
I hope they do it.
So, I can only imagine how many people that you're thinking of when I say this. But what one mentor has had the biggest impact on you, and what legacy have they left on you?
Well, I've had a few, so I don't know. There was one named John Allely. He was an anesthesiologist at Methodist, and then he died at 58 years old at Dodge County Hospital in Fremont. He died when I was 28. But from the time I was 14 to 28, I went to see him the most. Mm. And the impact that he made the most, Dr. John Allely, who was a very successful businessman and a doctor and a godly man and a great parent. But when I'd go get advice from him, and it was a lot of times I did, mm-hmm. I'd always leave saying, why the hell did I come here? I already know the answer. Mm. He had a gift that when I went in with the question, I left with my own answer, but he was able to help me
find it.
He's like a good therapist. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, they try to help you discover your own answers to your own questions.
But because he was so smart in life and business, it was good advice.
How did that person get in your life then?
I met him through a foster family, you know, and then I ended up mowing his lawn.
Yeah.
And it just, great. He has three daughters, and one just passed, and a son named Steve Allely. But I love him. Talked to Dr. Tariq Khan, who owns West End, where the shopping center is and stuff. They were really good friends. And we talk about John today. Dr. Khan's a urologist down in Fremont. But we talk about John a lot. He died of a heart attack at 58 at his home in Estes Park in the mountains. He went in peace. But I miss him the most because it was somebody I could go to and know that I could get the answer and know that I got to figure it out myself, so I retained it better.
Mm-hmm. Okay, John, when you were younger, what were you aspiring to be when you grew up?
An FBI agent.
Really?
I wrote the FBI at 14. They said, here's what you need to do to get to become an FBI agent, and that is what I wanted to be.
What did they say you had to do?
Go to school.
Yeah.
And learn a lot. And I, but because of my alcoholic father and the beatings and all the hell I went through, it never worked out that way. But I love asking a million questions. I drive people nuts. People say, how did you get that out of me? And I think it's funny that I just think I would have been a natural at it because I love learning, and I love people tell me I got a steel trap mind and that I remember not only everything about everybody, but I remember so many details. And I think that's what probably an FBI agent's good at.
I can see podcasting in your future.
Yeah.
If you're, minus having the mind like a steel trap, obviously, with the three of us here. So, but you could bring that to the table. It'd be even better.
I think one of the keys of my successes of people opening up to me if they have over the time is that I'm willing to open up. Mm-hmm. I think if you're willing to open up, they're willing to open up. I think a lot of people want to open up, but they're afraid to open up, you know? And so I have net, you know, everybody has a story.
I think the best stories are the ones where the person being asked questions is vulnerable. And we have talked about this a lot. And I think people just don't like being, it's the spotlight effect. You know, you feel like everybody is looking at you and it's embarrassing and you're sharing something that's really important to you. So it's emotional, but the actual effect is the opposite. People can relate and you find yourself they're more relatable or you're more relatable to your audience. And I think people lean into, you know, vulnerability and it makes the most effective story when you are instead of just glossing over things and giving surface level content. So,
you know, funny thing is when I was in high school, I thought I was going to be an FBI agent and to the point where I got my class ring and I had the justice thing put on the side. And I, somebody told me that to get in the FBI, you had to get in the military. So I tried to get into the military and then I had heart issues and they said, no, you can't get in. And then that whole plan and idea just went into the wind.
Well, hey, there's still time. Colonel Sanders didn't start KFC until he's 61, 62. Well, last question for you, John. With all of the, you know, things you're involved in, the businesses, the foundation, the charity and all that good stuff, what's the best way to reach you if somebody catching this episode maybe wants to connect? And is there anything that you're looking for either in your business or foundation right now that, you know, if somebody catching this might know someone, anything like that for you?
Just keep blessing people. And if I can, you know, I do mentor a lot of people, and I've done it a lot. We'll keep doing it when I have time. Time is very short. It seems like it gets shorter as you get older. Enjoy your, you know, my biggest advice that people got a hold of me is, you know, I'm single, you know, unfortunately divorced, but looking for the right soulmate. That's one of my goals. I want to have a life like this guy and have a wife and lover like you do unconditionally. It's wonderful what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And so johnhoich.com is my website. My mobile's on there, tells about what I'm doing. And if anybody has a good idea that I'm always open to listen to ideas. I'm not looking to invest in anybody else's ideas, but I'm willing to give my time to say what I would do or wouldn't do if my advice is worth anything. It's free.
Well, you know, you do know there's a show now called The Golden Bachelor. So I could see maybe if you're out there looking for a soulmate.
I'm not that frickin' old.
Well, he's only 5 years older than you. So I'm just saying, I think you could probably go on there and clean up compared to some of these old guys. So.
All right. Well, you set it up for me.
All right. I'll see what I can do.
I'm looking for a compliment, not a complication. Okay.
So the very first time that I ever, the first time I met you was actually me attending a local RIA event when Andy was running the local RIA, and I was completely blown away by your story. I got your book, read it literally in that next day or two, and like I said before, the first thing I thought was like, man, this should be really a movie because it's not like a story that you would ever think is real. And I've looked up to you since that point. You were just so kind, and you know, you're such a well-known name in the city. You're definitely one of the top 10 most recognizable people in the city for what you do. And everybody, when you mention your name, everybody knows exactly who you are. But for the fact that you have this recognition, you have your successes, but you still go to these local meetup groups or charity events, and just you're just out there and talking to everybody. And I was recently just a couple weeks ago, I was at the Westside charity event called the VV. And here you are sitting at the table next to me, and you just met a lady, I believe her name was Jen, and she had no idea who you were at the point. You just get talking to her, and then you look over at me like, Ted, you two need to meet because of this, this, and this. And then I went and did coffee with her. I'm like, well, how long did you know John? And he's like, I just met him that day. But that's just who you are. You're a connector. You want to bring people around you. And I know I you came and spoke to our RIA group when after I took over. And you know, I just really appreciate what you've done. And then and there's so many people you blew away at that moment. At that moment too, I think Wyatt Simon and you got together right after that. And Wyatt was like, oh my gosh, thank you for having him on. And he's just been a great mentor to me already right after that. But most people that are in your position just don't do what you do and take the time to help out the smaller person, I'd like to say. And I think that's the legacy that you're definitely going to leave on, is how you help the smaller people, but you look at everybody as equals.
And if I start a new company, I'm looking for investors. It'd be called Mr. Connector.
There we go.
I just think, you know, I love connecting, and I always say that what the world needs now is love. And that's, if more people just look at it that way instead of self-serving, but the Rotary way, service above self, and just love people unconditionally. We all say I throughout life, but the more we can say us, we, and our as a team, I really believe it works. And I'm guilty of both sides, but you just got to realign your thoughts and minds to just keep blessing people. And I guess I preach a lot about giving a hand up, not a hand out. So what little time between now and my death, I just want to help people that are willing to help themselves if I can. At least they got to help themselves.
Yeah.
And that's all that I and a lot of other philanthropists want out of people. You know, if we're willing to help you, help yourself. If you're not going to do that, then go on to someone that is willing to. Yeah. You know, all of us have different decks of cards we're dealt when we're born and throughout life. It's how you play the game and play it fair, tell the truth, have integrity, and do unto others as you want them to do unto you. The golden rule of life, and you'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a good place to end right there. So I appreciate it. And I know that you live by your rules, and thank you so much for coming on.
God bless you, and God bless America.
If you listen to the first time or 107th time, I think that you should jump on right now. Give us a 5-star review based on what you just heard. Give us feedback on John's interview here. We appreciate you and appreciate John. And with that, Owen, we see us out.
On behalf of Dentless Bertrand, RIA Radio, and Ted Kosh, I'm Owen Dashner. You've been listening to John, the investor, author, syndicator, philanthropist, Rotary Perfect Attendance Award winner, and Mo'Boy Hoich.
Signing off.
1 in particular that I literally have to give you credit for, because you put the seed in my mind. The idea in my mind. Sorry, that just sounded wrong, but
I'll put the seed in you, buddy. Well, in the window.
But the idea.
But let's radio edit. I'm gonna bring up the golden nugget. Do we don't have news to talk about?
What's
right?
Our golden nugget?
Well, I don't know, but I'll go into golden nugget, and then
okay, you're gonna go into a golden nugget that you
and,
don't have.
Yeah, and then we'll do the cap into John Hoich, and I'll do an intro to that. And
what's
fucking move into John Hoich, man.
Well, I don't, you use words that yeah. nobody knows what they mean.
So you know true. Exactly. You know exactly.
I don't know what cap end means. What is that? The cap end.
You're such an asshole to me all the time.
It was for real. I wasn't being a dick. It was just a question. I didn't say it in a dick way. Like, what is
Denless is so stoned today. He's laughing like a girl.
What is the cap end? We all want to know.
Okay, so
move into the cap end and you keep going like this.
I just have to get those here real quick. Okay.